Well,
we just got another official email from Mumford & Sons.
And it's...
saying they're unable to make the interview happen. You know why?
Why?
Because everything they do is sold out. They don't need to do interviews. So well, they're here in town this week, I think.
But would can we just turn this up to you?
Oh, they'd want to talk to me. Oh, yeah. These are the guys that made banjo cool.
Well, Steve Martin.
No, he didn't make banjo cool.
Are you kidding? Steve Martin's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I took banjo lessons when I was a kid.
Oh, and you wouldn't have made it cool?
No, not at all.
With that big Q-tip haircut of yours?
Afro, I was the only guy at school that afro playing banjo. That's what I was all about, man.
That's beaten stuff.
I was Jufro before Jufro. Okay, first thing I need to say about this next guest is we have spent, most of the show debating how to pronounce his first name. So, Imam, say it
Suhaib.
Again. Suhaib Webb. So before we read his bio, because to be honest, you know, who cares about a bio?
Before we, when the first thing you say, you have to say Ramadan Mubarak.
That's a greeting?
That's just like happy Ramadan.
How do you know this?
I teach in Brampton.
Oh, yeah, okay. He's an American Muslim scholar, and he's on the phone with us, and it's quite a thrill because he's kind of a big deal. Right? People know him. He's a big deal. Imam Webb, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, guys? What's going on?
It's so funny. I mean, really, it's like when people find out I do what I do, they're like, really? Or when they find out I used to be a pastor, that just kind of blows their brains apart. When people find out that, you know, you used to be a hip-hop gangster and now you're an imam, that's just too much for people, man, right?
Yeah, maybe a little less gangster and more hip-hop.
Okay, though. All right.
People tend to romanticize the gangster part.
Yeah. Yeah, I read some Wikipedia stuff on you. How true is that?
I think it's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Love it. Love it.
Exactly.
How do we say your first name?
Well, my first name is William.
Dang!
One, two.
Why didn't I just say that?
Yeah, exactly.
He's busting my chops, man. He just threw me under the bus.
William Webb, that's pretty...
I was just expecting to hang out with Mumford & Sons.
Sorry, they were supposed to be on the show today, but apparently they...
I'm the Smashing Pumpkins to Guns N' Roses.
Nice. There it is. Look, in these days, you don't want to be mentioning Guns N' Roses because you know you're old. When your lead singer can't... No, hold on. Not Guns N' Roses. Well, AC/DC. When your lead singer can't hear anymore, and so you hire the lead singer from Guns N' Roses who can't walk because he's in a wheelchair. That's like... That's a tour sponsored by Depends.
That's the geriatric tour.
Yeah, it is. Oh, man.
Lawrence Welk is their opening act.
Lawrence Welk.
And the one. And the two.
And...
Yeah. They're on the bubble machine.
So is it Suhaib?
Suhaib.
Sue, like a girl named Sue, and then Habe.
Let me just go through some of this stuff. Apparently, you're a big deal, right? I mean, I did creep on you a bit. You got like 600 million Facebook followers or something. When was the last time somebody said to you, yeah, you're not a real Muslim because you're American? I mean, in order to be a real Muslim, you got to grow up in the hood over there.
I've never had anyone say that to me.
No one ever says that?
Only the Islamophobes say that. Megyn Kelly says that.
Megyn Kelly.
Really? She said that about me when she was criticizing me. She said, he's not even really from a Muslim country.
Well,
so
he is now.
The people that I've actually heard that from are Islamophobes.
What's your take on Trump?
You know, the Prophet Muhammad is recorded to say that at the end of times, the ignorant will become leaders.
Uh-oh.
That's
pretty
scary.
That pretty much hits Trump on the head for me. I think Trump, I'm packing my bags for some Tim Hortons, guys. Giving up my Starbucks. I think that Trump represents a dying breed of America, really captured in a tremendous amount of rhetoric, which is rooted in a sense of privilege. And he's really out of touch with the future of America, which is, of course, much more diverse, spiritually, ethnically, you name it. And I think he's just kind of, it's kind of like that last stand in the bar room. They're all up in that bar room with their pistols waiting for that last big shootout.
But here's the deal. You live in the most democratic society, apparently, in the universe, although I haven't been all over the place in the universe. And if they vote him in, that's what democracy is all about. If you guys vote... everybody with the bad hair in, well, that's how it goes.
Indeed. I mean, and I think that's where, you know, Barry Goldwater in the 70s scolded the conservatives when he said to them, you guys need to grow up. You know, the young conservative movement was extremely emotional but wasn't able to organize. I think now young America is going to be faced with a daunting task of organizing. Their numbers are greater, but if they don't vote, then it's a vote for Trump.
Yeah.
So I agree. I agree with you. I think that it will say a lot about the apathy of people who are emotionally invested in progressive values or even in religious values. I think for many religious people, Trump poses a tremendous set of contradictions. But if we're not able to organize, then we have no right to complain, and we just have to settle for Tim Hortons for 4 years.
Sorry, it's better than Dunkin' Donuts coffee, brother.
Oh, Dunkin' Donuts, seriously. If America runs on Dunkin', no wonder you guys are going down the toilet. Gee.
Well, Massachusetts runs on Dunkin'.
Oh, okay.
It does.
Right.
Yeah. Been there.
Just wrong. Hey, did you watch the Muhammad Ali funeral? Wait, you're such a big deal, you were probably at the funeral.
Unfortunately, I was out. I'm on a tour now for some nonprofits that are helping Syrian refugees. And congratulations, you know, yesterday a report came out that said so many Canadians have volunteered to take in refugees that they don't have enough refugees to go around. Canadian people are like a ball of awesome.
A ball of awesome. Yeah, baby. That's us.
Freaking awesome,
yep.
Man.
It's yep. Tim Hortons.
Except for the mediocre sports teams.
Oh, whoa. Smackdown on the Drew Marshall show.
No, listen. We're going to invoke Calvinistic notions of theodicy here. In
Whoa, now you're really screwing with my head. That's listen, a good name for a band, though. Calvinist notions of theodicy. This is great.
They could open for the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
But no, I'm doing nonprofit work really in the month of Ramadan, raising money to help settle those refugees.
Okay.
In homes, and so I was not able to attend the funeral, but it was absolutely incredible. It was riveting.
You know, people say he's a hero and he's awesome and stuff, and we tend to glorify dead people a lot. I mean,
we
kind of forgot some of the skanky things he did. And then somebody said to me, I'm talking particularly about the relationships he was in. Somebody said, well, you know, he stepped away from a lot of money for 3 years when he got kicked out of boxing because he wouldn't go over to Nam. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't want to go to Nam either and get dead if I was a young black guy. So I don't know how brave it was to not go to Nam. You just lose out on cash. But I tell you, it was a good career move for him. You all hate me? I'm looking around the room. I got eyes looking at me going, yeah. Dude, are you really saying this?
I've been drinking Dunkin' Donut water.
Well, I mean, I think at that time, hindsight is 20/20, but I think the time that he did that in where black Americans were very much engaged in negotiating their humanity and citizenry in America.
Right.
He gave up a lot. But I do agree, one of the things I talked about in my sermon yesterday is that Muhammad Ali struggled to be Muslim. Right, he's very open about some of the challenges he faced as a young man with women and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I said that's really outside of the incredible lesson of Muhammad Ali's life, which is achievement is not enough, right? To achieve is really what normal people do, but to turn that achievement into influence is prophetic. And for him, even after his death, to be able to have such an influence is really a beautiful thing to see. But then what gets lost in that, as you said, is we love to turn... I think Freddie Mercury and Queen sold like most of the albums after he died. You know, Prince rocketed to number one the week after he died. Nothing sells records like a death, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Tupac released 6 albums since he's died, you know.
Yeah, JFK's got some hits coming out too. And
he's got a mixtape coming out with Fetty Wap.
Chief Keef featuring JFK.
Oh, man.
But the Chief Keef and JFK. But the beauty of Muhammad Ali is someone who, at a micro level, is in the ring physically fighting, and then at the macro level for Muslims, is someone who every day is in that spiritual struggle to submit to God, and that's lost in trying to turn his life into this. You know, he's probably going to be declared a saint by certain Muslims or something. No, he was someone who was very open about what Christians would talk about, the battle of the spirit and the flesh, right? The battle of submission and desires is something that reigns very true in Islamic ethos. And I feel that's being missed. That here's a very human example of someone who, in spite of his honest struggles, is blessed by God to use his life for good. I think that's a very powerful narrative for people like me who are normal.
Tim, do you want to introduce our guest since I struggle with his name again? What is it again?
Imam Suhaib Webb, or what I like to call him, William.
He laughs like the Dalai Lama. Listen to him. I love it. Okay, I'm about to put my foot into it again because it's a spiritual gift of mine. Years ago, when I was more wound up about gay stuff than I am now, we had a really hot lesbian singer come on the show, and I had a beautiful conversation with her, and I said, you know, this is, I hate to admit this, but as an ignorant, heterosexual, middle-aged North American male, it helps me lighten up about gay stuff when someone like you talks about it, because, you know, I still have it in the back of my head that it's all these sort of, you know, masculinized women who were coming at me, coming at me with the rights and the picket signs and da da da. And unfortunately, because I'm a dopey male, your hotness helped sell the message.
What now, do you mean by hotness?
What?
Is that metaphorical hotness? Or
No, it's physical. Like, no, she was beautiful.
Okay.
So I'm telling you, I'm as deep as a nickel. But what I'm trying to get around to here is I wonder if you being an American Muslim scholar helps those who are freaked out about Muslims lighten up. Because, you know, you're just you. You're just, quote, one of us. How many politically incorrect things have I said in the last 47 seconds?
Tim's counting. Outside of calling a woman hot, at least on this side of the border, I think everything else is okay.
Okay, all right. Actually, someone just said that the other day. I can't say that anymore because I'm an old guy.
They're hot?
I can't say.
You know millennials. Millennials are super sensitive.
Oh, dude. Can I get you back on the show? We are going to have we're going to do 4 hours of tearing millennials apart. I am just so, with the exception of Tori, Tori, our intern who's in the studio right now. Tori, you're awesome. But your age group, I want to pound. Sorry.
No, let's build together. We don't have to tear them apart.
Okay, whatever.
Build together.
Anyway, do you think you being a white Muslim dude is helping the cause?
I think me being a white Muslim dude is like the first time you saw Tiger Woods play golf.
Right. So hold on, for the white dominant golfers, that freaked them out.
Right. And I think the first time, you know, people saw Eminem spit more bars than Hershey's. You know, I think it's something there that could be challenged.
Tim, can you turn your mic down if you're going to lose
sorry,
it?
Sorry, that was brilliant.
My
I
goodness.
Love it.
It's
was that Dalai Lama?
Yeah. Man.
I'll be honest with you, though. Quick answer. I think that's why the Islamophobes come after people like myself. I think you've had Sheikh Hamza on before. I think they worry about, you know, Islam, like any other religion, Muslims are not a monolith, so culturally we're not a monolith. We have an American Muslim culture, right? We're, you know, we run on Duncan, no offense, right? But we're still Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the other end, that's why I'm sure you're aware ISIS about 3 weeks ago put me on a hit list to be killed with Sheikh Hamza. So I think within the far right, well, I would say heterodox circles of the Muslim community, I wouldn't even categorize them as being far right. We are also a threat. So it's interesting that you'll find a synergy between the far right Islamophobes and the heterodox Muslim community, such as ISIS. They see Islam as very similar, so therefore, you know, a white dude who's just a white dude is a threat. But then at the same time, we are able to humanize, like you and I talking about Smashing Pumpkins, Guns N' Roses, you know, millennials, who I like about as much as the IRS.
you know, or your proctologist, yes.
Yeah, or an alimony bill. But I think that is really, Islam is still prepubescent in America. And as it grows naturally, I think interned with Muhammad Ali, what Dr. Sherman Jackson wrote brilliantly, is the idea that Islam and America are incompatible. That's been interned with Ali's death. Ali proved that that's not true.
Oh, you give me a headache. All right, let's go back to pronouncing your name. Imam
William
Suhab.
Habe.
Habe. Habe. Like Gabe.
Yes.
There you go. Sue, you can Gabe. Call me Gabe.
Okay. Okay, when you think of Gabe, who do you think of? Tim? Welcome back, Carter.
Oh, I was thinking of a ranch kid.
Exactly.
That I knew.
Exactly. Wow. Welcome back, Carter. Welcome back, Carter, for sure.
There was a ranch
kid.
Okay,
why are you guys starving yourselves this month? What's up with that? Why a month?
Fasting.
Stop it. But, I see. So you can give up. It's about giving up something. So it's not just food.
Well, yeah. I mean, the word fasting in Arabic means to stop. So it's about stopping the intake and creating the capacity to give. And one of the means to do that, we have been taught, is to reduce our food and our drink during daytime hours. And then that should be transferred into being able to have a greater sense of empathy with those around us who are in need. So you'll see, I believe you have one in Toronto, you have one in London, you have what's called the Ramadan Tent Project, where there's massive tents erected to serve the homeless people. So, and the people who need food. So it's about really decreasing. I mean, we're in a world now where they're saying our consumption is threatening our existence. So it's a great opportunity to reduce my consumption and hopefully turn that into a habit so that my carbon footprint is less. So there's really a lot of benefits to fasting. It's not as hard as people think it is.
I'm not into giving up stuff. It's not my thing. What? Why are you pointing at me?
I'm pointing at your eyes. You're lying.
Well, my lying eyes? You're going to start singing the Eagles
here?
No.
I'm sorry. You know, that's a type of fasting. That's
right. So 6 years ago, for the last week of Lent, a friend of mine's an optometrist, and he sourced out contact lenses that took my sight away. So I went blind for the last week of Lent. I cheated and waited just for the last week. But anyway.
You went without sight for a week?
Yeah. And now I'm doing, okay. Now I'm doing a day a week of not talking. Apparently it's not today.
Well, what are you talking about that you're not giving up? That's incredible.
Yeah, I know, but it's, whatever.
Yeah, I understand.
Hey, are you the grandson of a preacher, man?
My grandfather, Lyman Dean Webb, L.D. Webb, was a preacher of the Church of Christ. Yeah.
He's not still alive, right?
He passed in the early 90s, yeah.
Right, so he's rolling over in his grave, do you think, with you being a mom?
Yeah, I would suggest that he is indeed rolling over in his grave.
So why did you bail on Jesus? And sorry, let me just clarify that. You guys still into Jesus, just not as much as the Jesus people. What happened? Why did you jump ship? Well, that's a phrase. That's a thing we've been saying a lot today. We've had two lesbians on the show, and we're talking about jumping ship a lot.
I missed all the fun.
Yeah.
I missed all the fun.
What happened?
So I, you know, around the age of 13 or 14, I became somewhat disillusioned with Christianity.
Hold on. At what age? 14?
Like 13 or 14, yeah.
But isn't that the time of your life where you get hormones and you're disillusioned with everything except porn?
No. I mean, I was completely fascinated with pornography. But disillusioned with Christianity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So how seriously can you take anybody's disillusionment at 14 is what I'm saying.
I was pretty serious. I took it very seriously. I took my relationship with God very seriously, although, you know, I love Marilyn Chambers and Tracy Lords. So I actually, the last thing on my mind was becoming one of those crazy freaking Muslims. I experimented with different forms of Christianity, speaking in tongues and, you know, doing things like that, and still had some serious concerns with what I was hearing and trying to logically put it together with respect to all of your Christian listeners.
My Christian listeners have no respect.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, so then, you know, I questioned the idea of God being a man or God having a son. That was something I could never really put together. And then I was DJing. I was a hip hop producer around 16 or 17 years old for a guy who, of course, in your greatest spiritual epiphanies, there has to be a copious amount of marijuana involved.
Yes.
So, you know, we were smoking tremendous amounts of weed, and then he brought up this idea of Allah and Islam. And I was like, you hate white people. You guys blow up buildings. You treat your women like cattle. you know, the typical kind of presumptions rooted really in our history, our collective history as a white post-Euro, post-Greek society in its relationship with the Crusades and Islam and brown people in general. And then, you know, he kind of dispelled that. And he's like, what you should do is just read for yourself. And he's like, you know, that's the problem with people. People don't read for themselves. They don't think for themselves. So that actually encouraged me. Then I went and found a copy of the Quran, expecting to read some kind of crazy, you know, gospel, and was shocked and read it for like 4 or 5 years while smoking copious amounts of marijuana. And then I became Muslim when I was 20 and stopped smoking copious amounts of marijuana.
Have you ever gone through Dark Night of the Soul stuff where you wondered and you really doubted and that kind of deal?
I mean, I think we all go through doubts. You know, I love that about Mother Teresa, her bravery in, you know, the face of such popular sainthood. I think what makes her very relevant is her admitting of going through doubts. So I think we all have our ups and downs. I've never had the doubts that I had when I was younger. I think sometimes being Muslim is hard because of the bad things that Muslims do. And, you know, you feeling collectively sometimes made to feel responsible for that BS.
Well, that's the same thing in the Jesus scene too, right?
It's any religion.
Sure.
Yeah, but again, I don't know anyone in ISIS, you know, so or I don't know anyone in Qaeda or anyone who did 9/11. So I think the post-9/11 world for Western Muslims has been one of incredible growth.
Yeah.
Taking institution building seriously, engaging in society seriously. But at the same time, I think there's been a tremendous amount of tragedy and sadness because it's forced us to really, which ultimately will be good, right? Let's bring Calvin back into this, where we have to really address the horrors of these people and amputate them from our religion. I think that's been somewhat saddening in my own personal life because I believe there was so much more good that could have been done in the world. You know, if these idiots weren't doing what they were doing.
Well, a regular we have on our show, I talked about this yesterday, Mubin Sheikh, who went undercover with Canadian spy agency and helped, you know, he infiltrated the Toronto 18 gang, the terrorist plot, and, you know, he's a former jihadist and a very interesting guy. We have him on the
show. Powerful story, yeah.
Yeah, powerful story. We have him on the show once a month. He gives us the terrorism update. We call him the bomb. And like he, you know,
you should get in with a hot lesbian to see what happens.
Yes. Yes. Just how many groups of people can we offend on one show? So during 9/11, we asked him recently, you know, what were you doing during 9/11? He said, well, when the first plane hit, I joined my brothers in the street and he was going out saying, praise Allah. And then when the second plane hit, he went, we are in deep trouble. Life is different now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I woke up, I was an imam apprentice at that time. I was like David Carradine in the Grasshopper. Right. I still hadn't made it through the 36 chambers with RZA and GZA.
No, and, forget about taking the pebble. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So my phone was going crazy and people were telling me, you know, the World Trade Center has been hit. And then at that time, you know, the biggest city next to Oklahoma is Dallas, basically. So, you know, people were telling me Dallas is under attack. And I didn't have a praise Allah moment. I was extremely offended and angered because I had a sense of understanding what this meant long term, even though I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it was going to potentially force us into dual or even triple roles, if you will, of number one, addressing extremism within the Muslim community through theology, sociology, and law enforcement. And of course, the military. The military is a government issue. And then secondly, really organizing our relationship with the people of our country because they were obviously going to be extremely angered. And then thirdly, my concern was that this would give birth to the Islamophobia industry.
Yep.
So I immediately, not that I'm some kind of genius, but I was just, there was no praise be to Allah moment. There was, this is effed up.
Yeah.
and you're killing freaking people, right? You know, you're murdering people, are jumping out of windows. So yeah, my slant was maybe a little different, and that's because I live with non-Muslims at that time. I was finishing college, and you know, I'm watching this with my non-Muslim family, and they're just looking at me like, what the hell did you convert to?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Sorry, I actually forgot I got you on the show to talk about Ramadan. I think we've talked about everything but Ramadan. How do we, as non-Muslims, act around you guys during this month? How can we be cool near you? How do we respect you guys? How do we even notice? Do we care?
I mean, no, I don't expect people who aren't Muslim to like act any different than they would in the month of Ramadan. Just like I might not necessarily know that you're going through Lent. Or, you know, I mean, I have a number. It's always interesting when we go to interfaith meetings and people invite, you know, the rabbi to come over on Friday night. And he's like, look, I can't come over on Friday night. I mean, people don't really, there's so many religious traditions. I don't think I'm special enough that mine has to be somehow recognized by you. So I just think, I mean, if I was out with a coworker and they were eating or drinking, I'm not. Doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. There's actually a very beautiful tradition, really for non-Muslims, where the Prophet Muhammad said that people that eat around you, angels pray for them. So I'm not expecting you to change your life. That wouldn't be fair for me to impose, really. Whew. My personal...
Good.
So Drew, continue to eat and drink and be merry.
Be a slob.
Sweet. Beer and
slothful.
Wings. Beer and wings.
No, but okay, so this is basically like this is Lent for you guys in some ways.
Yeah, it's like Lent.
Extreme.
Times two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Lent 2.0.
I mean, you could say to someone, like, just like you say Merry Christmas, you could say, you know, Merry Ramadan. The closest thing I could really relate Ramadan to would be Lent, although there are certainly some particulars that are very different.
Hey, what do you think about Jesus? Because everyone thinks, not everyone, most people think Muslims don't believe in Jesus, but you actually do believe in Jesus. So explain to people, especially the Jesus people, what your people believe about Jesus.
Well, we believe he's one of the greatest prophets. We believe he was born of a virgin. We believe he will come back at the end of times. I think the only major difference that we have is we don't, like every other prophet, believe that he is any way, shape, or form related to the deity or the deity. He's not God or the Son of God in Islamic theology. So we believe that born of a virgin birth, same as Christianity. We believe that he's one of the greatest prophets, one of the five most important prophets in Islam.
Who are the other ones?
Moses,
Noah,
Muhammad, Abraham, and we believe also that he ascended into heaven and that he'll return, and he will actually fight the Antichrist. We believe that. We just don't believe that he's God or the Son of God.
So hold on, who's going to fight the Antichrist?
Christ. We believe Christ will.
Wow, so it's going to be Jesus versus Trump.
The battle of the hair.
Battle of the hair.
Well, he's got the lovely locks, you know, in all the pictures there.
And Trump also has that amazing spray tan.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Jeez, who does that for him?
Where Jesus is as white as they come in every picture I've ever seen, so...
Did you do the spray tan for him on the day that you're blind?
Yes! I missed his eyes!
So that's what we believe about him. And we believe that it's forbidden to insult, like, you know, other people's religious figures or icons. The Muslims, unfortunately, overseas burning up churches and stuff. That's really antithetical to our theology. Unfortunately, people do stupid stuff all the time.
Welcome to the Drew Marshall Show.
Yeah, that's why. Who in your family freaked out the most when you jumped ship?
My mom.
How is she today? Wait, is she still with us?
Yeah, she's still with us. Pray for her. She's old.
How is she today? Is she still like...
Well, initially, you know, you're talking about the early 90s. You're talking about Gulf War I, Munich, Iran hostage crisis. You know, there were a number of things. And then, of course, all the horrible Rambo and Chuck Norris movies of the 80s came on the USA Network at 3 o'clock at night. So initially, you know, there was the religious concern of, you know, turning away from Christ. And then there was the concern of, you know, every time you turn on the TV, not every time, but oftentimes you see people claiming to be adherents to Islam doing some really, excuse my language, like crazy stuff.
Yep.
So initially there was that concern I think any mother would have. So after a while, I studied with actually a traditional scholar from West Africa who was in Oklahoma for 10 years. And he was like, you have to stay with your mother, you know, be good to your mother. Don't leave your family, finish college. And that kind of like, my mom was like, wow, he like wants you to go to graduate school and like, he wants you to stay with us. And so, you know, I talk to my mother daily. We have a really good relationship. And I think conversion, like any other religious experience, tends to come like a 5-hour energy drink or coffee from Dunkin's instead of Tim Hortons. It actually does affect you. So although your bagels are better. So, you know, initially when I converted, I was tremendously passionate, you know, and I think that's a problem with conversion or even religious awakenings or spiritual awakenings, that people are very passionate, and that passion actually kind of masks some selfishness, the need for authority. So in the beginning, it wasn't great, but over time it worked out. And now it's awesome.
That's cool. No, that's legit fantastic. I'm happy about that, man. Well, listen, we went overtime. That's because I kind of like this. This is good stuff. I didn't know what you're going to be like. Well, when you phoned me yesterday and we talked on the phone, I got off the phone and went, this is going to be good.
I never knew we'd talk about hot lesbians and fasting, but it sounds like a Cat Williams routine.
Yeah. Oh, wait, speaking of Cat, are you and Cat Stevens tight? Are you guys buddies? Because aren't you all, you guys are all hooked up with the celebrity Muslims, right?
I'm not a celebrity Muslim, man.
Whatever.
I'm just I'm a B actor. Yeah, I know him very. I know him. I've worked with him on a few things. He's the real deal, man.
Well, he better be, because when he jumped ship, we all thought he was going to just keep jumping ship, you know, and he's going to become a Buddhist, and then right, that was the joke of the day, because he was all Jesus-y, and then he got a Muslim, and but he stayed. He stayed put.
And he's a very beautiful human being. He's just a very sincere.
Well, you can't imagine someone who wrote "Mourning is Broken" to be a putz, you know,
be a toad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, he does a lot of work in education. People don't talk about schools all across England and in Bosnia. And he's kind of a silent educator. He's doing a lot of great work.
Hey, if you were here, we would have given you a butter tart from Higher Ground Coffee in Bell Fountain. But
oh, awesome!
Yeah,
great.
Sorry about your luck.
Yeah, amazing.
Do you ever come to Toronto, right? Don't you? Are you allowed to cross the border? You can come here, right?
Yeah, I am allowed to cross the border, and I could have met your other guests. It's been awesome.
Well, next time you're up here, you come co-host, okay?
It may be on November the 7th.
What, I don't get it.
The election is November 6th.
All right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I may be moving in on November 7th.
Sorry, we got a place. We got an extra stable in the barn for you. Imam Sahib Webb.
Suhaib.
Dang, still didn't get it right.
Just call him Bill.
Can you try to say the other name?
Will Hyam?
There you go.
Imam Webb, thanks, man. I appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you, guys. You guys are awesome.
All right, take care, man. Man, we got to get him back. Here's a website for you. SUHAIBWeb.com. SUHAIBWeb.com. Very, very short break. We'll be right back. But if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you make a lot of nice friends. How are you, Tori?
Good. How are you?
Listen to that voice. You're kind of sweet, aren't you?
Only sometimes.
I've heard. Tori, can you tell the world about something?
Of course I can.
Please.
So maybe you've been thinking about advertising your organization on the radio, but don't really have the budget for a long-term marketing campaign. Well, what if we gave you an entire show? The Drew Marshall Show is currently offering an innovative and affordable advertising concept for small business owners.
Huh.
With web stats and listenership at an all-time high, mm-hmm. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is offering you an opportunity to partner with us for an entire show.
Say it's not so.
Become a one-day advertising partner and we'll introduce you to our listening audience for the day. Drew will mention your organization every hour during our four-hour show.
That's four times.
And we'll give you a live five-minute phone interview. Oh, and one more thing.
Yes?
We'll also post your logo and website link on our website for an entire month.
No!
So, if you're thinking about promoting a special event, product, or upcoming sale, or if you just want to test the radio advertising waters without a huge investment, then consider becoming a one-day advertising partner with the Drew Marshall Show.
That's a good idea.
Contact us through our website, drewmarshall.ca, and ask about becoming a one-day advertising partner.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tori the intern on the Drew Marshall Show. Very well done. She gave us a little head snap and a thank you. Well, she just got back from somewhere.